They looked like a dream team. A group of kids dancing, laughing, living every tween's fantasy on YouTube. Millions watched, millions followed. They were branded, monetized, and adored. But behind the bubblegum thumbnails and flashy thumbnails was a world no one saw, until it began to crack. One by one, the kids started speaking out. Lawsuits were filed. Parents stepped in. Claims of emotional torment, sexual harassment, coercion, and relentless pressure surfaced like rot beneath glitter. At the center of it all, Piper Raquel's mother and manager, Tiffany Smith, the so-called momager of the squad, who allegedly turned a digital playground into a factory of exploitation. What happens when childhood becomes content? This is not just a story about YouTube or fame. This is a story about power, silence, and the price of internet gold, paid in trauma by the very children meant to be protected. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Bubblegum Empire. It started with a camera, a pink bedroom, and a precocious girl with a high-pitched voice that bounced like glitter off the walls. Piper Raquel, age 10, was already working the lens like a pro. There was no script, no polished studio, just charisma, choreography, and a mother who believed her daughter could be a star. And she was right. By the time Piper turned 12, she had over 6 million subscribers on YouTube, a merch line, music videos with tens of millions of views, and a self-styled entourage of kidfluencers known as The Squad. They were everything the internet loved: attractive, high energy, hyper-social tweens doing pranks, challenges, and dances with just enough sparkle to make it addictive. But behind the neon thumbnails and matching hoodies was an operation that didn't sleep. The Squad became a rotating cast of preteens and teens, all of them seemingly living part-time in the Raquel home, which had slowly morphed into an always-on filming compound. Lights didn't go off until content was captured. Sleepovers weren't really sleepovers. They were staging grounds. Every laugh had a camera near it. Every moment, a brand strategy. Tiffany Smith, Piper's mother and self-anointed manager, ran the empire like a CEO, producer, enforcer, and talent wrangler all at once. To outsiders, she was the doting momager. But to those who stayed long enough, a different picture emerged. "She was always watching," said one former squad member in a deposition. "You couldn't even breathe wrong without her correcting your tone. We weren't friends. We were castmates." In the early days, the money was electric. Brands threw thousands at videos with unboxing, slime tutorials, and couple challenges. Children who could barely drive were now bringing in five-figure sponsorships monthly. Some of them were homeschooled, others had pulled out entirely. The line between childhood and content creation blurred until it was invisible. In the Raquel house, boundaries didn't exist, especially not for The Squad. Cameras lined the halls, bedrooms doubled as sets, outfits were picked to pop on camera. The moment a new squad member joined, Tiffany had a plan: what their persona would be, how they'd fit in, who they'd date on camera, and how fast they could grow a following. "They called it a content house," said another teen in a recorded interview. "But it felt more like a machine. You had to perform. If you didn't get views, you'd be cut." Some parents signed waivers. Others were promised exposure and revenue shares. For those eager to chase the algorithm, the Raquel house seemed like Willy Wonka's factory. But instead of golden tickets, it offered clout. The videos were candy-coated chaos. Kissing challenges, boyfriend tags, emotional breakups, staged and restaged until they felt real. But these were middle schoolers. Most of them hadn't even had a first real crush, let alone a relationship. Behind the couple's content were instructions, often shouted off camera: "Do it again, but sexier. Cry more. Touch her waist this time." Sometimes Tiffany would yell, sometimes she'd withhold food, sometimes she'd offer rewards: iPhones, cash, rides, exposure. It was a push-pull system masked in Instagram filters and bestie captions. And it worked. Millions clicked, watched, liked, shared. The Squad blew up. So did Piper. But not all children wanted to be stars forever. As some began aging out of their roles or pushing back against Tiffany's control, Tensions grew. Kids were suddenly removed from thumbnails. Videos disappeared. Friends were unfollowed overnight. For the audience, it looked like drama. For the kids, it was personal and sometimes traumatizing. And then the whispers started, first in group chats, then on Reddit, then in confidential legal complaints. Allegations of verbal abuse, inappropriate touching, coerced performances, punishment for speaking out, parents claiming they were misled, former squad members describing a regime of fear, manipulation, and exhaustion. What had once been framed as a dream opportunity for kids to become creators was starting to resemble something far more dangerous, a system built on exploitation, all hidden behind the smiling face of a tween. In 2022, a group of 11 former squad members and their families filed a lawsuit in Los Angeles County against Tiffany Smith, alleging child labor violations, emotional abuse, and intentional infliction of distress. One of the most chilling parts of the complaint, that inappropriate touching, harassment, and sexually exploitative direction were not isolated incidents, but woven into the very DNA of squad content. The headlines were a shock. But for those who had been in the house, it was only a matter of time. Still, Piper's channel continued. Videos kept coming, views kept growing. Sponsors hesitated, but the audience didn't flinch. Why? Because the algorithm doesn't care who gets hurt, only who gets clicks. And as the legal battle begins to unfold, a larger question looms over the entire kidfluencer world. How many more children are being turned into content before they're ready? And who's protecting them when the cameras stop rolling? Chapter 2. The Whisper Network. The warning signs were always there. You just had to listen between the cuts. It started with awkward pauses in videos. A smile that didn't reach the eyes. A hug that looked just a little too staged. Viewers chalked it up to drama, the way fans of YouTube influencer groups often do, but for those who had lived inside the pink walls of the Rockhill filming house, the tension wasn't content. It was survival. I told my mum something felt wrong, said Alyssa, a former squad member who joined the team at age 11 and left quietly before her 13th birthday. But we were already locked in. My following had grown. I was making money, and I didn't want to lose everything just because I was scared. Her voice trembled during the interview, not because she was unsure, but because she'd kept quiet for years, only speaking out now under the protection of legal counsel. Alyssa wasn't alone. Others began reaching out to one another in secret. Voice notes, private DMs, burner accounts. They weren't just talking about one bad experience, they were comparing psychological scars. And for many of them, the source was always the same. Tiffany Smith. She made us feel like we owed her, said Jaden, another former squad member. Like she discovered us. So we had to obey. If we didn't, we were called ungrateful, lazy, fake. What formed quietly behind the scenes was a whisper network, a loose digital circle of tweens and teens who'd exited the squad under murky circumstances. Their stories were eerily similar. Tiffany yelling, threats of losing their channels, scripts that crossed boundaries, and the constant fear that one wrong move would ruin their budding careers. She would tell me that I wasn't sexy enough on camera, one girl testified in a sealed court statement. She'd say, "You're pretty in person, but that doesn't sell. You need to move like a woman, not a little girl." I was 12. Some victims say they were coached to flirt in crush videos, perform lap dances during challenges, or wear outfits they weren't comfortable in. When they resisted, they were humiliated or iced out of group shoots. If a parent raised concerns, Tiffany would allegedly threaten to cut their child from the brand entirely, reminding them that there's 100 kids who would die to be in your place. No contracts, no clear hours, no oversight. Just a sprawling, unsupervised production with minors at the center and a growing online empire that no one dared to challenge. What made the abuse so hard to identify and even harder to stop was the illusion of choice. These weren't children in chains. They had iPhones, ring lights, followers. They were influencers, supposedly empowered and in control. But when you're a child and your entire identity, your friendships, your family, your income, is wrapped in one adult's control, saying no doesn't feel like an option. Alyssa recounted the day she decided to walk away. She had just finished filming a prank video where she had to kiss another squad boy on the cheek, then pretend to cry because he cheated. After the fifth take, Tiffany allegedly screamed at her for not selling the emotion. "I remember her saying, 'Do you want views or not?' And I just stood there, frozen. I didn't even know what I wanted anymore." When she told her mom she wanted to quit, they pulled her out quietly, deleted her squad playlists, and tried to move on. But even then, she said, "I got DMs calling me a traitor. Tiffany told people I was a diva, that I was hard to work with. She turned the fans against me, and I was 12. In public, the machine kept running. New squad members rotated in. Relationships were announced and then broken up, weeks later. Emotional confessions were posted. Crying thumbnails trended. Everything was a spectacle, perfectly designed for virality, packaged like a tween soap opera, and monetized across platforms. The kids became storylines. And Tiffany, she stayed behind the camera, rarely appearing, yet always present, a quiet architect of every moment. But as more former squad kids came forward, the whisper network grew into something louder. One parent filed a formal complaint with the California Department of Industrial Relations, alleging child labor violations. Another reached out to the Screen Actors Guild, demanding protections for digital creators. And in early 2022, a Los Angeles Times investigation unearthed the first deep dive into the squad's toxic environment, quoting anonymous insiders and outlining repeated emotional abuse. It wasn't just an influencer drama anymore. It was a legal reckoning. Still, questions remained. Why didn't more parents speak out sooner? Why did YouTube allow monetization on videos with content that bordered on inappropriate? And why, after multiple allegations and lawsuits, was Piper Roquel still rising, with no major brands pulling out? The answer, in part, lies in the way influence itself has evolved. In a world where child stardom is DIY, where fame is measured in follows, and monetization is instant, traditional oversight doesn't exist. No studio executives, no school counselors, no labor reps, just algorithms and ambition. And Tiffany Smith had mastered both. But cracks were forming. Civil litigation was now underway. A list of depositions was growing. A new squad member had left, citing mental health reasons. And behind the scenes, a larger media investigation was beginning to take shape, one that would expose not just a single family, but an entire industry that profited off kids too young to understand what was being taken from them. The Whisper Network had spoken. The world was finally starting to listen. Chapter 3. When the cameras stop. When the ring light goes off and the comments slow down, silence becomes deafening. For many of the kids in the squad, their lives existed in 1080p, brightly lit, tightly edited, and filtered for consumption. But what the audience never saw was what happened after the upload. The tears behind locked bedroom doors, the panic attacks, the sleep lost to anxiety, the kind of damage that doesn't trend, but lasts. Eden, one of the youngest squad members, was barely 9 when she joined. She was recruited after her family submitted clips to a squad casting call on Instagram. She was sweet, precocious, and had a natural gift for performing. But less than 8 months later, she was gone. No explanation. No farewell video. Just gone. Her mother, Tasha, sat in her living room across from a cold cup of tea as she recounted the moment she pulled her daughter out. "They were filming a crush reveal video," Tasha said, voice tight. "Eden didn't even like the boy. She barely knew him. But Tiffany wanted drama. She kept telling Eden to smile more, lean in closer, do it again but cuter. It was like watching my daughter become someone else, someone she wasn't ready to be." When Eden said she was uncomfortable, Tiffany allegedly rolled her eyes and said, "Well, if she can't handle this, she's not squad material." That was the last day she filmed. There was no exit process, no offboarding, just radio silence from the entire group. No one reached out, no one checked in. For Eden, the sudden disappearance from the digital world where she had once been a star was disorienting. She thought she had friends. She didn't understand why they stopped texting. "She asked me if she'd done something wrong," Tasha said. "She thought she wasn't pretty enough anymore." The emotional fallout wasn't limited to Eden. Multiple former squad kids reported long-term issues with anxiety, dissociation, and body dysmorphia. A few had to start therapy. Some couldn't even look at a ring light without panicking. "When I left, I felt like a ghost," said Sophie, now 16. "It's like the world moved on without me. All my DMS dried up. No more brand deals. I wasn't interesting anymore." The stories repeat like a broken reel. Kids used for emotional confessions. Kids who were pressured to date each other for clicks. Kids who were suddenly removed from thumbnails, replaced with newer, more camera-ready faces. It was Hollywood without contracts, reality TV without regulation. And still, Piper Roccola's channel thrived. Despite the lawsuits, despite the headlines, despite the growing storm around her mother's alleged abuse, Piper continued to post weekly. The squad changed members like changing costumes. The thumbnails got more dramatic. The pranks, more intimate. Shocking kiss. Caught cheating. We broke up for real. The lines blurred between what was staged and what wasn't. For kids going through puberty, the pressure to perform, emotionally, romantically, created deep confusion. What was acting? What was real? What was just a script whispered off camera by Tiffany Smith? She'd tell us, "No one cares about boring. If you want views, you have to give them a story," said Ty, another former squad boy. "I didn't even like girls yet, but I had to pretend like I was in love on camera. That messes with your head after a while." When Ty finally spoke up about his discomfort, he was cut from the channel. His joint videos disappeared. His TikTok follower count tanked. He says Tiffany told other squad members not to associate with him, calling him soft and a liability. "I didn't even know what that meant. I was 13. As more kids exited the squad and started comparing experiences, one truth became undeniable. The emotional damage wasn't a side effect. It was systemic. Parents who once believed in the dream were now questioning everything. Some admitted they had ignored red flags in hopes of building a future for their child. Others said they'd been misled, believing they were entering a fun collaborative community, not an exploitative media machine. But the influencer world isn't built for introspection. It's built for performance. And for the kids who left, reintegration into normal life wasn't easy. Some tried to rebuild their own channels. Others left social media entirely. A few battled depression in silence. Most, like Eden, just wanted to feel normal again, to go to school, make friends who didn't know their subscriber count, and exist without being told to smile for the algorithm. Meanwhile, the lawsuits progressed. Depositions were taken. Tiffany Smith denied all allegations. In a brief statement through her attorney, she said, "My only goal has always been to support Piper's dreams and those of the squad. These allegations are false, hurtful, and opportunistic." But the testimonies painted a different picture. A culture of coercion, of weaponized attention, of children trained to believe that value came from views, and that those views came at the cost of boundaries, safety, and truth. And for every kid who had spoken out, there were likely more who hadn't. Kids still filming, still smiling, still unsure whether what they were experiencing was normal or not. Because when you grow up in front of a camera, you don't always know where the performance ends, and when the cameras finally stop, sometimes the silence is the most devastating part. Chapter 4. The lawsuit that shook the algorithm. On January 31, 2022, the machine cracked. A civil lawsuit filed in Los Angeles County Superior Court landed like a bombshell on an industry that had long operated in the shadows. The plaintiffs? 11 former members of Piper Roccola's YouTube collective. Children, now teenagers, who said their childhoods had been consumed by exploitation, abuse, and psychological manipulation. The defendant? Tiffany Smith, the woman behind the curtain, manager, producer, and mother of the platform star. The filing read like a horror story written in legalese. Words like emotional distress, child labor law violations, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of suffering were etched in black ink across dozens of pages. The heart of the complaint alleged that Smith had created an unsafe, exploitative, and manipulative environment in which children were pushed beyond their limits. Not for art, not for growth, but for profit. The lawsuit detailed coercive filming environments, emotionally inappropriate dating storylines, sexualized content involving minors, and a culture of surveillance where everything, from private phone calls to bathroom trips, could be used against the children to maintain control. At the center of it all was the squad, a rotating cast of minors who, according to the complaint, had been pulled into a system where consent was not freely given, but manufactured through fear, peer pressure, and professional dependency. And the court filing didn't just name Smith, it implicated YouTube itself. Though not listed as a defendant, the platform was called out by name for its monetization structure, lack of oversight, and failure to protect minors, even as they became the most visible faces on the site. The suit claimed that child creators, while legally limited in traditional film and television, faced no meaningful protections when producing digital content, despite generating millions in ad revenue. The internet lit up. News outlets like The Washington Post, Insider, and NBC ran breaking headlines. Clips of Piper dancing in crop tops or doing kissing pranks resurfaced across TikTok. But now, the comments weren't praise. They were alarm bells. Why was this allowed? Where were the parents? Why didn't YouTube stop this sooner? But the truth was, the industry had no precedent for this. Influencer culture had exploded so quickly that child labor laws, SAG contracts, and even COPPA, Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, hadn't caught up. What the lawsuit exposed was a digital Wild West, and Tiffany Smith was one of its most powerful pioneers. In depositions, former squad members told harrowing stories of what they endured. Being told to flirt with squadmates while Tiffany recorded off-camera notes, having private meltdowns used as thumbnails, being screamed at for gaining weight, being instructed to cry harder in staged breakup videos, watching others be cut off and replaced if they failed to perform. One plaintiff said she was repeatedly groomed into romantic storylines at age 11, directed by Smith to behave provocatively on camera for the sake of believability. Another child claimed he was punished with silent treatment and public humiliation when he asked to skip filming to focus on school. Behind the scenes, the squad was unraveling. Kids who once called themselves besties were now on opposite sides of legal lines. Some families offered public support. Others posted vague statements about moving on. Still, Piper continued uploading, undeterred by the media storm. Her team issued a brief public statement. These allegations are not only false, but malicious. Tiffany Smith and Piper Raquel are committed to creating positive, empowering content for young people. But the court wasn't swayed. A judge ruled that the case could proceed. A major win for the plaintiffs. Legal experts began calling it a landmark case for digital child labor reform. Advocacy groups picked up the story, pressing for legislation that would regulate child influencer work hours, pay, and content limits. The question wasn't just about Piper or Tiffany anymore. It was about all of them. All the children living inside content houses, all the 11-year-olds going viral on TikTok, all the family channels cashing checks without legal scrutiny. The lawsuit had pulled back the curtain on an industry built on unprotected youth. Yet the audience was conflicted. Some fans doubled down on support for Piper, calling the accusations jealous lies. Others demanded YouTube demonetize the channel, but in a world driven by views, outrage and support often blend together, and both generate revenue. In private, the squad survivors faced their own backlash. Anonymous accounts accused them of clout chasing. Former fans left hateful messages. One girl was doxxed. Another received death threats. One plaintiff's mother said her daughter had to leave school for her safety. They thought leaving would free them, she said. But for some of these kids, the abuse followed them offline. Inside the courtroom, attorneys fought over footage, consent forms, and messages. But outside, a larger war was underway between a broken system and the children who finally dared to say no. And all the while, Tiffany Smith remained defiant. She continued managing Piper, continued producing, continued monetizing. The lawsuit may have shaken the algorithm, but the machine was still running. For now, Chapter 5. Inside the Archive. It was never meant to be seen. Buried within hundreds of hours of raw footage, unlisted videos, and forgotten hard drives, there existed a hidden archive, a silent witness to the childhoods sacrificed at the altar of views. It came to light during discovery. As part of the lawsuit against Tiffany Smith, the plaintiff's legal team filed a motion to obtain the original, unedited recordings of squad shoots. What they received was more than metadata and thumbnails. It was a glimpse behind the curtain, an uncensored catalogue of a world built on control, coercion, and illusion. The footage filled terabytes. Entire folders labeled reshoots, bloopers, emotional takes, unreleased challenges, makeup tutorials, skits with crying children, footage that never made it to YouTube but had been shot nonetheless, sometimes late into the night. One video, timestamped 2:03 a.m., showed a 12-year-old squad member attempting a We Broke Up scene for the fifth time. Her voice cracked. Her mascara was smudged. Off camera, Tiffany can be heard saying, "No tears, no views. Again, don't blink so much." In another clip, a young boy winces as he's told to flirt with a squad girl he later said made him uncomfortable. "Act like you like her," Tiffany says. "You have to look like a couple, or the fans won't buy it." It wasn't just disturbing, it was incriminating. Attorneys flagged dozens of instances in the archive where child labor laws appeared violated: late-night filming, sexually suggestive dialogue, unlicensed coaching, and, most troubling of all, moments that blurred into real emotional breakdowns with no adult intervention. But the footage also revealed something else: how expertly the abuse had been masked by performance. When the cameras were rolling, the kids smiled. They laughed. They played their roles. But in the footage between takes, the truth leaked out like poison through cracks in the frame. A boy mumbling, "I hate this," between scenes. A girl asking, "Can I stop now?" and being ignored. Kids glancing off camera for approval before delivering lines, waiting for Tiffany's nod before expressing joy or sadness. The entire production relied on emotional compliance. These weren't professional actors with unions or set hours. These were children acting out stories they didn't understand, in environments they couldn't control, under the authority of a single adult who held their careers in her hands. And the more investigators watched, the more they understood. This was a system, not a mistake, not an accident, a deliberately engineered environment where vulnerability was harvested for virality. One video folder was labeled "Breakdowns equals views." Inside were raw clips of children crying. Some appeared scripted, others didn't. In one, a squad member sobs after a prank goes wrong. Instead of cutting, the camera lingers. Tiffany's voice, "Don't stop. This is real. Keep it rolling." Another child, barely 11, breaks down during a challenge and whispers, "I don't want to do this anymore." Off screen, a door slams. No adult comforts him. By the time investigators finished logging the footage, the story told by the archive was no longer just an allegation. It was a documentation of sustained harm, and it changed everything. Lawyers for the plaintiffs moved to submit portions of the footage as evidence. A judge approved limited inclusion, but word of the archive leaked. Media outlets began demanding access. YouTube stayed silent. And Tiffany? She claimed the clips were taken out of context. In a written statement released through her attorney, she said, "These are rehearsals. Like any production, multiple takes are required. At no point was a child forced to do anything against their will. The footage has been manipulated to support false narratives." But the footage didn't need manipulation. It spoke for itself. One former squad editor, who asked to remain anonymous, described what it was like scrubbing through the videos to make them YouTube ready. "I had to cut around their pain. That was literally my job. I knew when a laugh wasn't real. I could hear it in their voices. I would remove the worst parts so fans never saw what we saw, but it's still there, between every smile." The archive became a cornerstone in the public's growing reckoning with kidfluencer culture. It was cited in articles, referenced by child advocacy groups, and used as training material by digital rights lawyers lobbying for new legislation. But for the squad members, watching those clips was a different kind of trauma. Some had never seen the raw takes. They had no idea what had been kept, what had been said, what had been saved. "I watched myself sob on screen," said Sophie, now a plaintiff. And I realized, I don't remember doing that. I dissociated. I don't remember that moment at all. It wasn't just content, it was evidence. Evidence of how far Tiffany had gone to maintain control, how easily she turned children into characters, and how no one stopped her. Not the parents who looked the other way, not the platforms that profited, and certainly not the fans who kept clicking. But the archive wouldn't remain hidden anymore. And with its revelation, something irreversible happened. The myth of innocence that protected the empire shattered, because when the masks came off, and the raw footage was finally seen, the truth became undeniable. They weren't just filming content. They were filming trauma. Chapter 6. The Cancel Culture Illusion. The internet can destroy you in a day, or make you richer than ever. In the weeks following the public release of excerpts from the Squad archive, outrage swept across every platform. Hashtags like Chew Justice for the Squad, Chew Protect Kid Influencers, and Chew Cancel Piper Rockel trended on TikTok and X, formerly Twitter. Influencer watchdogs, parenting advocates, and everyday viewers posted duets, think pieces, and fiery takedowns. For a moment, it seemed like the empire Tiffany Smith built was finally crumbling. Sponsors paused their deals. Comments were limited or turned off on Piper's videos. Change.org petitions demanding YouTube demonetize the channel reached over 250,000 signatures. An online movement surged. Protect children, not content. But just as fast as the fury rose, something else happened. Nothing. No major brands publicly pulled out. No major influencers spoke out. Not the ones who shared management ties or brand deals with the Rockel team. YouTube issued a boilerplate statement about child safety being a priority, but declined to remove or demonetize the channel. Piper's next upload, a Valentine's Day prank video, debuted to 3.4 million views in 48 hours. Why? Because cancellation isn't real when the algorithm is stronger than morality. In digital culture, outrage fuels the very platforms it's meant to condemn. Every repost, reaction, and stitch counts as engagement. Negative press brings visibility. And in the case of Piper Rockel and the Squad, the spectacle became the product. For the children who spoke out, it was a cruel twist. They had braved backlash, legal threats, trauma exposure, all in the hope of dismantling the system that had once controlled them. But instead of collapse, they watched Tiffany's brand harden into something more shameless, more defiant. 1 week after the lawsuit was picked up by national media, Piper posted a Q&A video titled, "Am I Being Cancelled?" In it, she giggled, dodged legal questions, thanked fans for always supporting her, and announced new merch drops. In the comments, fans left heart emojis. Critics were buried by her loyal, paparazzi. One fan account wrote, "She's just a kid, y'all. Let her live. These haters just want clout." That comment got 2,000 likes, but behind the screen for the plaintiffs, the former Squad, the cost of speaking out was mounting. Some were still in therapy. Some had stopped posting content altogether. One plaintiff, Jaden, said he couldn't sleep without checking if a camera was watching him. Sophie struggled with social anxiety, afraid that anyone who recognized her might bring up the drama. Their stories were real, their trauma documented. But in the digital economy, truth doesn't always trend. Even with media coverage, legal filings, and corroborated footage, Tiffany's control persisted. Not just over Piper's brand, but over the narrative. She began framing the lawsuit as a smear campaign, hinting that the children involved had been manipulated by jealous parents or greedy attorneys. In leaked audio, she's heard saying, "They couldn't make it as stars, so now they're trying to bring us down." Typical. It worked. Some fans turned on the victims. TikTok comment sections filled with posts like, "If it was really that bad, why didn't they leave sooner?" Sounds like buyer's remorse. They just want attention. But attention was the very thing they wanted to escape. As Ty said in a live stream, "It's not about clout, it's about healing. And we can't do that if people keep making this a circus." Meanwhile, lawmakers began circling the case. California State Senator Susan Rubio introduced a bill aimed at regulating child influencers, citing Piper's case directly. Dubbed the Kids Act 2.0, it proposed mandatory labor contracts, screen time limits, and income protections for minors producing digital content. But bills take time, laws take votes, and in the meantime, the squad kept filming. A new wave of children had replaced the original lineup. Their smiles were fresh, their thumbnails shinier. And once again, Tiffany's hand was just out of frame, invisible, but in total control. For the original squad members, this was the most painful betrayal of all. Not just that they had been replaced, not just that their stories were doubted, but that the cycle was repeating, in real time. "I thought exposing the truth would stop it," said Alyssa, now 15, "but it just made her smarter. Now she hides it better." Some survivors tried building their own brands, safer, quieter, more honest. Others left social media completely. A few continued fighting through the courts, determined to make this case the beginning of change, not just another scandal that fades with the next algorithm shift. Because for them, cancellation was never the goal. Accountability was, but accountability doesn't trend. Not like heartbreak, not like kisses, not like 12-year-olds pretending to fall in love on camera. The internet demanded justice, and then moved on. And as it did, the children left behind were forced to face a cruel reality. You can go viral for telling the truth, but you won't always be believed. Chapter 7. The Silence Clause. It started with an envelope, slipped under a door, handed across a kitchen island, sometimes emailed in legalese, other times casually folded and delivered with a smile. But for the children who had once called themselves Squad, it was the same message over and over again. Be quiet, or we'll bury you. They called them NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. But for most of the young squad members, they weren't legal contracts. They were muzzles. They were pressure. They were fear, wrapped in adult language they didn't fully understand. "I didn't even know what I was signing," said Eden, whose mother recalled being handed an NDA on her daughter's second day of filming with the group. "They told us it was standard, that it just meant we couldn't spoil upcoming videos." But buried inside the language were broader stipulations, clauses forbidding public criticism of management, restrictions against discussing internal dynamics, and threats of civil liability for damages if confidential business information was leaked. Language so vague it could include anything from an off-camera scream to a private argument between squad members. One parent said she was told bluntly by Tiffany Smith herself, "If you speak about this publicly, we'll sue. I have lawyers on speed dial." It wasn't a bluff. When the lawsuit against Smith was filed, legal discovery revealed a pattern of NDA enforcement going back years. Documents signed by minors, countersigned by their guardians, but never reviewed by attorneys. Many of the children didn't know they could refuse. Some thought they had no choice. In some cases, the NDAs were signed after the child had already left the squad, a condition for receiving payment or for having their image removed from YouTube. A quiet trade. Silence for erasure. But even without a signature, the threat of retaliation was real. Former squad members described receiving legal warnings, cease and desist letters, and veiled social media messages hinting at consequences. One girl said her school received an anonymous complaint about her behavior after she began speaking out. Another boy's parents were threatened with a defamation lawsuit after they gave an interview to a parenting podcast. "They want us to feel like we're crazy," said Jaden. "Like if we say anything, they'll destroy us." It worked. Some kids who originally joined the lawsuit dropped out. Others asked to have their names removed from media coverage. Several interviews were cancelled last minute after urgent concerns were raised by families, most of whom now feared being financially ruined for simply telling the truth. But the silence wasn't just enforced through paperwork. It was weaponized socially. After leaving the squad, victims found themselves blacklisted, not just by Tiffany, but by other influencers, brands, and even peers who didn't want to get caught in the crossfire. Entire TikTok sub-communities quietly labeled them problematic. The phrase, "hard to work with," began circulating. Former friends stopped replying. "It's like we were erased from the internet," said Sophie. "One day I had DMs and comments and invites. The next day, nothing. Just static." The industry had absorbed the scandal, and then decided it was safer to erase the mess than confront it. Even creators who privately sympathized with the squad victims declined to go public. Some feared they'd be sued too. Others didn't want to lose brand deals by rocking the boat. A few, insiders said, had ties to the same manager networks that had once protected Tiffany Smith. But for Tiffany, silence wasn't just legal. It was psychological. Guilt was a weapon, said a former squad assistant who later gave a deposition. She'd guilt the kids into thinking speaking out would hurt Piper. She'd say, "You want her to lose everything because you're upset?" She made them feel selfish for hurting the brand. It was an old playbook. The abuser's deflection masked as moral duty. The idea that protecting the group meant suppressing harm, that truth was betrayal, that pain was bad for business. But eventually, cracks formed. One brave former squad member, a girl named Lily, 14, refused to sign the NDA. Her parents backed her decision, and when threatened with legal action, they went public instead. They published the NDA online, line by line, clause by clause. It went viral. Journalists picked it apart. Legal experts condemned it. Child advocacy groups called it coercion. The California Attorney General's office took note. A law professor at UCLA referred to it as one of the most dangerously ambiguous child-facing contracts ever seen in influencer media. With that single act of defiance, the illusion began to unravel. Lily's story reignited the conversation. Podcasts returned to the case. Influencers began whispering again. And perhaps most importantly, the remaining squad victims saw that silence wasn't inevitable. If one of them could say no, maybe they all could. But Tiffany didn't back down. She posted a now-deleted Instagram story. People will always try to tear down success. It's sad what some will do for attention, but we stay winning. The same day, Piper posted a dance video. It reached 1 million views before dinner. And so, the system churned on. Less visible, more cautious, but just as cruel. Because while the NDAs could be burned, and the lawsuits might settle, one thing still echoed louder than any contract. The silence wasn't a choice. It was a sentence. A sentence that many squad kids were still serving. Long after the cameras stopped, long after the lawyers left, and long after the world had moved on to the next scandal. But for those who had lived it, the silence was deafening, and it demanded to be broken. Chapter 8. The Parents Who Fought Back. For a long time, the parents stayed quiet. Some out of fear, some out of shame, and some because they'd believed in it too. The dream, the spotlight, the chance to give their kids a future they never had. But when the squad started to fall apart, when the lawsuits mounted and NDAs leaked, a new chapter began. One not written by influencers, or lawyers, or Tiffany Smith. It was written by the parents. "I should have known," said Maria, mother of 13-year-old Jaden, one of the original squad members. The way she controlled everything, the clothes, the scripts, even the way they hugged each other on camera. But it was hard to argue with the views. The money, the fans, it all felt unstoppable. She paused, fingers trembling around a worn-out legal pad. "I didn't realize we'd sold our silence, too." Maria wasn't alone. Dozens of parents had once stood on the sidelines of squad videos, holding phones, fixing hair, encouraging takes. They were part of the machine, whether they knew it or not. Some filmed their own kids' channels in hopes of launching similar careers. Others moved across state lines to be closer to the Rockell home, seeing it as a golden ticket. But as more children left the group, broken, anxious, confused, a different truth settled in. They hadn't given their kids opportunity. They had handed them over. And once that realization set in, the retaliation began. Not in whispers, but in paperwork. Maria was one of the first parents to sign onto the lawsuit. She gathered depositions, sent letters to the Department of Labor, and worked with other families to organize a support network. They called themselves the Digital Defenders, a coalition of parents determined to expose not just Tiffany Smith, but the entire ecosystem that enabled her. "It's not just one bad manager," said Tasha, Eden's mother. "It's the whole structure, the platforms, the ad networks, the talent agencies pretending this is normal." With the help of a pro bono legal team specializing in child labor law, the Digital Defenders compiled a dossier titled "Influencer Abuse: The Unregulated Frontier of Child Stardom." It included testimonies from over 20 former squad members and their families, screenshots of coercive texts from Tiffany, unpaid labor logs, evidence of falsified parental consent forms, redacted excerpts from private therapy sessions outlining trauma symptoms. They sent the dossier to state legislators, the Federal Trade Commission, and advocacy organizations like Fair Play and the National Center for Youth Law. Within months, it reached the desks of lawmakers in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. The movement had begun. State Senator Susan Rubio, already tracking the Rockell case, invited the digital defenders to testify in front of a Senate subcommittee hearing. For the first time, the parents weren't on the sidelines. They were front and center, holding photos, reading letters, shaking as they spoke. One father choked back tears as he read a note from his daughter. "I just wanted to make you proud. But it felt like every time I cried, you looked at the camera instead of me." Another mother, voice shaking, said, "I ignored my instincts. I let them tell me this was just acting, but it wasn't. It was exploitation." The testimony went viral. Clips aired on national news. Advocacy groups mobilized. Think pieces filled the internet with a new message. Maybe the parents were victims too. But now they were the last line of defense. Still, not all parents came forward. Some denied wrongdoing. Others insisted their kids had been treated fairly. And a few still defended Tiffany, calling the lawsuit a witch hunt and claiming their children had only good experiences in the squad. But the silence that once protected the system was crumbling. One by one, the alliances shifted. Even former insiders began flipping. A content house manager came forward with contracts. A brand liaison admitted that Tiffany had asked them to withhold payments from certain children until they got their attitude right. An ex-editor handed over backups of raw footage Tiffany thought had been deleted. The machine that once seemed untouchable was now bleeding from within. Still, the cost was high. Maria received threats. One anonymous email said, "We know where your son goes to school." Another parent's home address was doxed. Piper's fans flooded comment sections with accusations of parental exploitation. Ironic, considering the very thing being exposed. But the digital defenders didn't stop. They launched a public awareness campaign, "Stop Filming Their Pain." They released a short documentary on YouTube featuring anonymized squad testimonies, expert commentary, and behind-the-scenes footage that had never aired. The video hit 1 million views in 2 days. Not because it was viral in the traditional sense, but because it struck a chord. It wasn't just about Piper anymore. It was about every child being filmed for profit. Behind every prank video, every surprise reaction, every staged crying confession, there was a kid, a real one, with a real life, and often no protection at all. For the parents who once stood behind the camera, that truth was hard to live with. But now they were in front of it, telling the story the way it should have been told all along. Chapter 9. The Brand That Couldn't Bleed. By spring of 2023, most brands would have collapsed under the weight of what Tiffany Smith and Piper Rockell were facing. The lawsuits were active. Depositions were public. Allegations of child exploitation, emotional manipulation, and labor abuse flooded national headlines. A state legislative hearing had just aired footage of squad kids crying mid-shoot. And yet, the Rockell brand did not bleed. It evolved. Sponsors may have paused, but they didn't pull. Piper's channel still averaged over 30 million views a month. Instagram collabs continued. A new line of Piper-branded fashion and accessories launched through a dropshipping site with zero acknowledgement of the controversy. Even worse, new children began appearing in thumbnails. "Who is this girl?" one former squad member asked under a muted burner TikTok. "I've never seen her before. She's like 10? She was part of a new squad. Same bubblegum aesthetic, same prank-heavy content, but now with even younger faces. Carefully polished, more tightly controlled, and eerily silent online. Their parents signed fresh contracts. Their pages were curated by managers. They didn't answer DMs. They didn't speak out. They learned from us," said Sophie. "They saw what happened when we told the truth. So now they only bring in kids who will never speak." It was, in some ways, a masterstroke of branding. The name Piper Rockell had become less about a person and more about a media product. A clickable, ad-friendly entity engineered to survive even the worst PR disaster. When Piper appeared at Playlist Live 2023, fans screamed louder than ever. No questions were allowed during her panel. No press badges permitted backstage. A short documentary crew was escorted out by private security when they tried to interview parents in the crowd. Still, the show went on. To many fans, Piper was the victim, a teenager trying to grow up while the world picked apart her every move. Her vlogs were framed as empowerment. She talked about moving forward and staying strong. She never addressed the lawsuit, never acknowledged the archive, never mentioned the friends who had vanished from her thumbnails like ghosts. "She's just a kid," fans repeated. But the question loomed larger with each upload. Was she really still the one in control? Tiffany Smith rarely appeared on camera anymore, but behind the scenes, her fingerprints were everywhere. Private DMs between former squad editors and producers confirmed she was still managing brand deals, still directing content, still editing metadata and thumbnails. One former editor, speaking anonymously, said, "She got smarter. She started watching every frame, removing anything that looked too emotional, too real. She micromanaged the energy. She didn't want another breakdown on tape." What emerged was a sanitized version of the empire, squeaky clean, legally protected, and deeply hollow. The children smiled harder. The thumbnails were brighter. But the soul was gone. And yet, the audience stayed, because in the end, the algorithm doesn't care about justice. It cares about watch time, about retention, about what happens when a viewer taps play. Even YouTube didn't step in. Despite internal reports, public pressure, and direct appeals from lawmakers, the platform issued only vague promises to revisit policy enforcement for family content creators. Behind closed doors, sources said YouTube was terrified of precedent. Demonetizing Piper Roquel could spark a reckoning they weren't ready for, one that might expose thousands of other channels built on similar models. So they did nothing. And Tiffany knew it. She pivoted strategy, began quietly investing in off-platform monetization, merch, NFTs, paywalled content on exclusive apps. She started pitching a reality series, one without drama, she said, just empowerment and resilience. She even launched a Piper Roquel music EP with lyrics that hinted at betrayal, haters, and strength. It charted on iTunes. Meanwhile, the squad lawsuit dragged on. Settlement talks began. Some claims were dropped. Others moved forward. But the headlines slowed. The outrage cooled. New scandals filled the feed. Old victims were algorithmically buried beneath layers of newer, shinier content. Jaden called it the erasure. "We screamed until our throats gave out," he said in a podcast interview, "and people just scrolled past." Behind the scenes, the digital defenders tried to keep pressure on, but they were exhausted. Legal fees mounted, support waned, and Tiffany, ever calculating, leveraged their fatigue into a kind of quiet victory. Because while the lawsuits hadn't gone away, they had become background noise. And in influencer culture, background noise doesn't stop the content machine. So Piper danced, the squad rebranded, and the empire stood tall. But inside the industry, something was shifting, quietly, unevenly, but undeniably. Creators began forming alliances. A handful of major YouTubers called out exploitative family channels. Discord groups surfaced with creators demanding child labor reform. Young influencers started asking for contracts, for counselors, for rest. It wasn't revolution, but it was a spark. Because while Tiffany Smith's brand hadn't bled, the wound she opened in the industry was spreading. And sooner or later, even the best edited empires fall apart. Chapter 10, The Interview That Broke the Internet. It was uploaded on a Tuesday night. No promo, no teasers. Just a thumbnail with two chairs, soft lighting, and a single title in white serif font. "I'm ready to talk," former squad member speaks out. The video was just under an hour long. The platform, YouTube, the host, a relatively unknown child safety advocate and podcast creator named Raina Wells, whose channel barely had 15,000 subscribers before that night. But the interview would hit 10 million views in 72 hours. Because sitting in that second chair, heart pounding, eyes flickering between fear and fire, was Piper Rockel's former best friend and co-star, Lily Summers. Lily had been a member of the original squad. She'd appeared in dozens of Piper's most viral videos, sleepover pranks, dating reveals, fake feuds. Her breakup video with fellow squad member Ty had amassed over 25 million views. And then she was gone. No explanation. No farewell post. Just missing from thumbnails. Until now. "I've been silent for 3 years," Lily began, voice steady but soft. "But I'm not a kid anymore. And I'm done being scared." It wasn't scripted. It wasn't clickbait. It was raw. Lily described in harrowing detail what it was like living under Tiffany Smith's rule, the emotional manipulation, the punishments, the contracts signed in haste, the times she cried off camera and was told to use it. She described being told who to date, how to dress, and what to say. If you didn't cry convincingly, they made you do it again. If you didn't flirt enough, they said you weren't pulling your weight. If you said no, you were a problem. Raina wisely let Lily speak. No interruptions, just questions that peeled back layers of a girl who had once been America's digital sweetheart, and who now, at 16, was a reluctant whistleblower. The most chilling moment came at minute 37. Raina asked, "Did anyone ever try to stop it? Did any adult ever intervene?" Lily's eyes welled with tears. "Number. They were all in on it." She said producers looked the other way. Other parents rationalized it. Even crew members laughed off the abuse as method acting for YouTube. "They wanted the content. We were the content. If we broke, they just replaced us." When asked why she hadn't spoken out earlier, Lily held up her phone. "This. I've had this typed out so many times, but every time I tried to post it, I'd hear her voice in my head, Tiffany, telling me I'd be nothing without her, that I'd be sued, that no one would believe me. I believed her. Until now." And then came the twist no one expected. Raina leaned in. "Is Piper aware of what was happening? Do you think she was a victim too?" Lily didn't hesitate. "Yes. But she doesn't know how to escape it." The comments set the internet on fire. Forums exploded. TikTok replays racked up millions of loops. Lily was right. Trended for 2 days. Old squad videos were dissected frame by frame. Fans reevaluated every laugh, every prank, every scripted heartbreak. And Piper? She posted an Instagram story with a black screen and the text. "Sometimes the people closest to you are the ones who hurt you the most. No comment." Tiffany Smith, however, went full damage control. Within 24 hours of the interview, her legal team sent a cease and desist letter to Raina Wells. It accused Lily of defamation, breach of NDA, and malicious slander intended to harm a minor's reputation. But the video stayed up. Raina responded with a follow-up post. "We've done our legal due diligence, and no child should be gagged from telling their truth." The internet sided with Lily. Even creators who had remained neutral before, some with millions of followers, began reposting clips from the interview. A few opened up about their own experiences growing up on YouTube. Influencer moms released apology videos, rethinking what they'd exposed their kids to. Child labor reform hashtags surged. The fallout didn't stop at YouTube. Mainstream media picked it up. ABC Nightline did a feature. The Atlantic published a piece titled "Digital Childhoods, Real Trauma: The Era of Kidfluencer Reckoning." Lawmakers reignited calls to pass the KIDS Act 2.0. And buried in the noise, something else surfaced. A former assistant producer from the Rockel camp reached out to journalists. She had kept a journal, screenshots, audio files. She claimed she had proof that Tiffany Smith had edited scripts to be more mature, pushed children to lie about their ages, and once said, on tape, "If they cry, we cut it into the intro. People love real emotion." Investigators subpoenaed her. Suddenly, the lawsuit felt different, bigger, more urgent. Tiffany released a final statement via Instagram. "It's heartbreaking to watch people you helped become so cruel. I've always protected Piper. I've never abused anyone. These lies will not win." But no one was listening anymore. The veil had been pulled. The silence had been broken. and now the world had seen the girl behind the thumbnails. Not the smiling actress, but the child who had lived it. Lily's interview didn't just tell a story. It changed the game. Chapter 11. The Girl Behind the Glitter. For years, Piper Raquel had been everything the internet wanted a child star to be. Funny, bubbly, marketable. She cried on cue. She danced like she was born for TikTok. She said things like, "I'm just living my dream," even when she was 12 years old and sleeping 4 hours a night between shoots. She was the face of the empire. But no one knew what happened off camera. Not really. Now, in the wake of Lily's explosive interview and the reignition of the squad lawsuit, a new question began to surface, one that no one had dared ask publicly. Was Piper Raquel a victim too? At first, it seemed impossible to reconcile. Piper had everything. Brand deals, red carpet appearances, over 11 million YouTube subscribers. She wasn't on the fringes, she was the core. But behind the heavily filtered stories and TikTok trends, something didn't add up. "She always looked exhausted," said Ty, a former squad boy who once pretended to be Piper's boyfriend for a month-long storyline. "Even when we weren't filming, she acted like she was still performing." Ty remembered moments the fans never saw. Piper crying in the bathroom after Tiffany yelled at her for flubbing a line. Piper staying up until 3 a.m. to reshoot an emotional prank video. Piper apologizing to her own mother for not hitting the video's view target. "It wasn't a job for her," Ty said. "It was survival." Others noticed too. Private texts began to circulate among former squad members. Screenshots of Piper venting, sometimes in code, about the pressure, the lack of breaks, the fear of being replaced if she didn't keep smiling. One message read simply, "I want to disappear, but I can't. The brand needs me." The message was sent the night before a YouTube video titled, "I Broke Up With My Crush, For Real." It trended at number 7 in the US. And still, Piper never spoke out. Whether by fear, loyalty, or conditioning, she stood beside her mother at every public appearance. She nodded through interviews. She thanked fans. She never acknowledged the lawsuit. Until one day, she did. Not with words. With a photo. It was a black and white image posted to her Instagram grid. No caption, just a single photo of herself at age 6, before the squad, before the lights, before the empire. She's sitting on a beach in a sundress, looking out at the water. The internet read between the pixels. Was it a cry for help? A statement? A goodbye? Thousands of comments flooded in. Some begged her to speak up. Others told her she had nothing to apologize for. A few said the quiet part aloud. "If you're still under her control, blink twice." But Piper didn't blink. Not publicly. A week later, she posted a dancing video with her new squad. It was glossy. Perfectly edited. Smiling faces. Upbeat music. Soft transitions. Business as usual. But former squad insiders whispered that something had shifted behind the scenes. "She's different now," said Ava, who had reconnected with Piper briefly after leaving the squad. "Quieter, paranoid, she checks who's watching before she speaks, like she's always being listened to." Ava described one visit where Piper barely said a word unless her mum was out of the room. When she did speak, her sentences were short, rehearsed, and eerily empty, as if they had been filtered through years of brand-friendly training. "I don't think she knows how to be a kid anymore," Ava said. "I think she only knows how to be Piper Raquel." Mental health experts weighed in publicly for the first time. A child psychologist specializing in performance abuse told Teen Vogue, "When a child's entire identity is monetized, there's almost no way for them to separate their real self from the persona. It creates what we call emotional fragmentation, a survival mechanism where they split into two versions just to cope." Meanwhile, fans turned speculative. Conspiracy theories bloomed. Was Piper trying to escape? Was she being silenced? Was she complicit? Every movement was analyzed, every expression picked apart. But the truth was more devastating than speculation. She was trapped. Not in a physical sense, but emotionally, psychologically, contractually. The brand couldn't function without her, and she had been raised to believe she couldn't function without the brand. The lawsuits continued. The headlines cycled, but Piper remained in place, a ghost behind the glitter, smiling because it was expected, filming because it was required, and clinging to the only identity she had ever known. Lily's words echoed through the silence. I think she doesn't even realize what was done to her, because when it's all you've ever known, you don't call it abuse, you call it normal. And that's the most haunting part of all. Not that Piper was hurt, but that she may never know who she could have been without the camera. Chapter 12. Flashback. The Rise of the Momager. Before she was the center of lawsuits, scandal, and whispered warnings, Tiffany Smith was just a mother with a smartphone and a daughter she said was born to be famous. There was no studio, no manager, no crew. Just Tiffany, Piper, and a second-hand camera in a Georgia living room with pink walls and a Pinterest-inspired backdrop. But even in those earliest videos, long before the squad, long before millions of subscribers, you could see it in her eyes. Tiffany was building something. Not just a YouTube channel, not just a Mommy and Me brand, but an empire. And from the beginning, she knew exactly what it needed. A star. That star was Piper. Cute, confident, fearless, in front of the lens, Piper quickly became the centerpiece of a fledgling channel, focused on crafts, dance routines, and DIY kid life. But the numbers weren't good. Views plateaued. Tiffany studied the algorithm late at night, watching what went viral, what flopped, what thumbnails popped. Then came a pivot. She introduced pranks, then challenges, then crush reveals. Emotional storylines framed around romantic curiosity and preteen drama, and almost instantly, the views exploded. Piper was 11. Tiffany began reshaping the content, not around Piper's life, but around what would perform. Real emotions were pushed. Couples were cast. Conflict was manufactured. And it worked. The fan base grew fast and rabid. By 2018, Tiffany had quit her job and gone all in. Piper was now homeschooled, shooting nearly every day. A small production team was brought in. Lighting kits, schedules, NDAs, and most importantly, new kids. Tiffany knew one child couldn't carry the brand. She began recruiting, first through DMs, then through casting calls masked as collabs. The term The Squad was born, and with it, a concept perfectly engineered for digital virality. A constantly rotating group of kids creating relationship drama on camera, framed as real life, but carefully controlled from behind the scenes. I knew she was smart, said Riley, a former squad parent, but I didn't realize how much she planned. She kept notebooks, literal notebooks, where she mapped out storylines for months in advance. One notebook, later obtained during discovery, contained a handwritten grid with columns like name, role, innocent, diva, crush, rival, growth strategy, exit plan. It wasn't parenting. It was producing. Tiffany trademarked Piper's name, started a merch line, filed LLCs. Every squad member was asked to sign monetization agreements. Most never saw a dime. Some parents questioned it, but Tiffany was always ready with a response. If you want fame, this is what it takes. I built this. I can unbuild it too. Behind closed doors, she was controlling, exacting, and strategic. Multiple squad members recalled how Tiffany would push them to fake emotions, flirt on command, and deliver more chemistry. One said she was told to say, "I love you," on camera, after only one day of meeting her squad partner. "She told me I wasn't allowed to say no," the girl said. "She said I was under contract and it would ruin the video." Tiffany had learned the formula cute kids, emotional tension, scripted authenticity, clickbait titles, instant monetization. She studied the analytics like a surgeon. If a video dipped below expectations, she adjusted thumbnails. If a squad member's drama started trending, she reshot intros to match. If a parent questioned her, she ghosted them. "Everyone was replaceable," said Derek, another parent. "Everyone except Piper." But even Piper had rules. She wasn't allowed to cry off camera. She wasn't allowed to break character in public. And most disturbingly, she wasn't allowed to call Tiffany anything but Momager when cameras were rolling. The term became its own brand. Printed on shirts, quoted in interviews, spoken with pride. But behind the curtain, Tiffany was no longer just a mom. She was a gatekeeper, a warden, and to many, a master manipulator. Her rise was ruthless, but it was effective. By 2020, she was managing millions in ad revenue. She negotiated with major brands. Her daughter was on Good Morning America, and still, she maintained plausible deniability. She wasn't a network. She wasn't a company. She was just a parent, a protective mother, helping her daughter chase her dreams. But in court, that defense began to crack. Depositions revealed texts where Tiffany bragged about controlling story arcs. Voice memos surfaced where she coached children through emotionally uncomfortable scenes. And one document, marked private, outlined a squad loyalty tier, assigning rewards, iPhones, bonuses, spotlight thumbnails, to members who followed directions, and punishments, removal, reduced screen time, to those who didn't. It was a factory, and Tiffany Smith was the foreman. To this day, she denies wrongdoing. She claims the squad was a family, that all content was consensual, and that she is being vilified by bitter ex-friends trying to cash in. But the timeline tells a different story. A story of a woman who, over 5 years, rose from obscurity to digital royalty, not through luck, but through cold calculation and the commodification of children. And no matter how many filters she applied, the truth couldn't be edited out. This wasn't just a brand, it was a business built on kids who didn't know how to say no. Chapter 13, Spiral. The squad breaks down. They were the faces of a billion views. Individually, they were teens, with bright smiles and ring lights. Together, they were the squad. A content collective that had, at its peak, outperformed network TV for their demographic. Their names trended on TikTok. Their breakups made headlines. Their videos filled hours of scrolling for millions of kids around the world. But behind the thumbnails, they were coming undone. It wasn't just one breakdown, said Jaden. It was a slow-motion car crash, and we were all in the back seat with no one driving. The spiral didn't begin with a scream or a scandal. It started with fatigue. For years, the squad filmed almost daily, sometimes two or three videos at once, back-to-back challenges, emotional arcs plotted weeks in advance. The pressure to stay relevant in the algorithm meant there were no real breaks, no true off days. Even birthdays were turned into surprise videos. Illnesses became squad get sick vlogs. Real-life drama was repackaged into on-screen narratives. Ty described waking up some mornings, not knowing who he was supposed to be that day. Piper's fake boyfriend, the jealous ex, the prank victim, or just himself. But being myself didn't get views, he said, so that version of me disappeared. One girl, Lexi, began having panic attacks between takes. She was 11. A scene partner once found her in a closet hyperventilating after being told to redo a crying scene for the fourth time. Tiffany said I wasn't crying right, Lexi later said in a sworn statement. She told me to cry harder, or she'd replace me. The breakdowns became normalized. Crying between takes was called resetting. Kids who froze on camera were teased, made fun of, or edited out entirely. Squad members began comparing notes. Who was getting yelled at the most? Who had been benched? Who Tiffany was done with? I started keeping a count in my phone, said Daisy, one of the younger squad members. Every time someone cried that day, sometimes it was three, sometimes it was five. The pressure wasn't just emotional, it was relational. Squad pairings were scripted like television arcs. New crush, jealous ex, crush confessions, kiss or diss. But for many of the squad members, these were their first explorations of attraction. And instead of being private, those feelings, or the performances of them, were engineered for public consumption. Several squad members reported being instructed to hold hands, lean in, or whisper, "I love you," all on camera, sometimes repeatedly, until the reaction looked real enough. Lexi later admitted she didn't know what half the words meant. I didn't even understand what we were doing. It felt like playing house, but everyone else thought it was real. The confusion spiraled. Kids began fighting. Real crushes clashed with fake ones. Jealousy flared when one squad member got more screen time. Some stopped speaking off camera. others began sabotaging each other's takes to stand out. The toxicity bled into everything. One squad member was caught self-harming in a bathroom after being mocked on set for crying too soon. Another confided in a content assistant that he didn't want to live anymore if he got cut from the channel. That assistant, who later became a whistleblower, tried to intervene. She emailed a warning to Tiffany. "Some of the kids aren't okay. They need a break. They need someone to talk to." Tiffany's response: "If they can't handle it, they shouldn't be here." The spiral continued. Kids quit, only to be replaced by newer, more compliant faces. Some were gone overnight, fans left confused, comments unanswered. Within the squad, the message was clear: disappear, and you'll be forgotten. But something had shifted. One by one, the squad began breaking the silence. First in private group chats, then in shared drives, then, quietly, in interviews, anonymous submissions, and legal declarations. They compared scars. They matched timelines. They realized that what had felt personal wasn't unique. It was systemic. By the time the lawsuit was filed, at least 7 former squad members were in therapy. 2 had been prescribed anxiety medication. 1 had dropped out of high school due to trauma-related dissociation. Lexi refused to appear on camera ever again. "I can't even look at a ring light without shaking," she said. "It's like a trigger, like a warning, like I'm about to be turned into someone else." The most haunting testimony came from Daisy, who was 9 when she joined and 11 when she left. "I thought we were best friends. I thought I was lucky. But now when I watch those videos, I don't see me. I see a girl who wanted to go home, and no one let her." The squad had been designed to look like a family, but behind the scenes, it had become a factory of pressure, performance, and pain. And no matter how tightly Tiffany tried to control the narrative, the truth had finally begun to leak through the seams. They weren't breaking down in silence anymore. They were breaking open. Chapter 14, Exposure. When justice goes viral, justice doesn't trend. Not usually, but in late 2023, for a brief and blistering moment, it did. It started with a tweet, short, direct, and unexpected, from the verified account of actress and former child star, Jeanette McCurdy. "What happened to the kids in the squad is not entertainment, it's abuse. I know the signs, and I see them all over this case. To protect child creators." In under 4 hours, the tweet amassed 2.6 million views. By midnight, it was everywhere. Podcasts, YouTube commentary channels, even international press picked it up. The squad lawsuit, once tucked inside true crime forums and advocacy blogs, suddenly sat squarely at the center of mainstream culture. McCurdy wasn't the only one. Within 48 hours, Millie Bobby Brown liked the post. Former Disney star Raven Simonet reposted it. Influencers from TikTok, Twitch, and Instagram began publicly declaring support for squad survivors. What had once been a whisper campaign had turned into a movement, and it wasn't just support, it was action. Hashtags surged. Squad survivors. Kids aren't content. Shut down the Roquel brand. Petitions that once hovered in the tens of thousands jumped to 500,000 plus signatures. One, addressed to YouTube directly, demanded immediate demonetization of the Roquel channel and a full review of child exploitation on the platform. YouTube remained silent, at first, but pressure mounted. Parents uploaded reaction videos with their children, reacting to squad footage and visibly recoiling. Media analysts broke down clips frame by frame, citing emotional manipulation, forced labor, and systemic grooming tactics. Even former squad fans began posting their own "I didn't know" videos, admitting that in hindsight, something had always felt off. The tipping point came with a second viral interview. This time, not from a former squad member, but from a parent who had once helped film the content. Trevor Fields, father of squad alum Lexi, sat down for an hour-long segment on 60 Minutes Digital. Calm but visibly emotional, he opened with one sentence: "I thought I was helping my daughter chase her dream. I didn't realize I was handing her over to a machine." He spoke of being manipulated by Tiffany Smith, of being told what to say to other parents, of signing documents he never read, of filming scenes that made him uncomfortable, but rationalizing it for the brand. And then he played the voicemail, a clip of Tiffany, angry, recorded just days after Lexi tried to quit. "She doesn't get to walk away from this and talk. You need to control your daughter, because if she hurts Piper's brand, you'll regret it. I promise." The clip aired nationally. YouTube issued a public statement within 48 hours. "We are reviewing all monetization associated with the Roquel content channel and investigating potential violations of our child safety policies. We take this matter seriously." But to many, it was too little, too late. The channel was still live, the videos still monetized, the squad still filming. Still, the impact was undeniable. Within 1 week, multiple brands pulled out of partnerships with the Roquel team. Talent agencies distanced themselves from the Roquel name. Piper's Instagram went dark for the first time in 5 years. And for the squad survivors, they watched in awe and grief. "It felt good to be heard," said Lily. "But it also hurt, because we had to bleed for people to pay attention." Sophie echoed the sentiment. "We told the truth for years. It took celebrities and TV shows for anyone to believe us." But there was progress too. Lawmakers in California, Illinois, and New York began fast-tracking bills protecting underage content creators. Digital labor advocacy groups launched funding for therapy and legal support for former child influencers. And for the first time, squad members were invited to speak on their own terms, at conferences, panels, schools. Their pain was no longer clickbait. It was a warning, a reckoning. Still, there was one name missing from all of it: Piper Roquel. She didn't post, she didn't comment, she didn't return. Her silence spoke louder than any statement. Because justice may have gone viral, but healing isn't broadcast. It happens in pieces, in quiet, in slow undoings of damage that was done for views. But for the survivors, something monumental had changed. The world finally saw what they had seen for years. This wasn't entertainment, it was exploitation, and it was time to shut the machine down. Chapter 15. Revenge. A Mother's War. Her name wasn't famous. She had no blue checkmark. No followers to speak of. Just a daughter who used to smile for the camera until she stopped. Her name was Claire Morrison, mother of Lexi Morrison, one of the first squad members to suffer a public panic attack on set. And Claire had reached her limit. After years of silence, after lawyers and lawsuits and leaked voicemails, after watching her daughter wither into a shadow of who she once was, Claire did something that Tiffany Smith and the influencer world never expected. She declared war. It wasn't emotional. It wasn't messy. It was methodical. Claire filed a civil countersuit, not for monetary damages, but for permanent injunctive relief. She wanted a legal ban on all monetized media containing her daughter's likeness, past or present. She cited unlawful use of Lexi's image, emotional trauma, and, in a bold move, invoked the California Constitution's right to privacy as her legal anchor. But she didn't stop there. Claire launched a nonprofit, Let Them Be Kids. Its mission, to lobby for federal protections of children in influencer content, including income trusts, mental health oversight, content limits, and the right to digital erasure upon request. "I don't want money," Claire said at the launch press conference. "I want accountability. I want the system that devoured my daughter to face the consequences." Because Piper wasn't the only one. And Tiffany wasn't the last. She partnered with attorneys, pediatric psychologists, digital rights activists, and most importantly, with other squad parents who were finally ready to speak up. Some had been waiting years for someone else to go first. The nonprofit made headlines. Claire was invited to testify before Congress. She met with lawmakers, school boards, even child actors' unions. Everywhere she went, she carried a folder. Inside it, a photo of Lexi smiling before her first squad shoot, and a second photo taken 2 years later, the same girl, but vacant-eyed, pale, and silent. "This is what monetized childhood looks like," she would say. But Tiffany Smith didn't flinch. Instead, she retaliated. Within a week, her legal team filed a defamation suit against Claire, claiming the nonprofit's messaging was targeted slander intended to cause reputational harm and financial injury. The suit named Let Them Be Kids as a malicious entity operating under false pretenses. Claire countered by going public, again, this time with a video titled To Tiffany, You Want War. Here it is. It opened with footage of Lexi at age 9, beaming before a squad shoot. It ended with a clip of Lexi in therapy, quietly saying, I'm not sure who I am when I'm not being filmed. Claire's narration in the video was calm, firm, devastating. You took my daughter's trust. You turned her tears into thumbnails. You built a kingdom from kids who didn't understand the cost. And now I'm going to make sure it ends with me. The video went viral, not influencer viral. Policy viral. By the end of the week, lawmakers introduced the Children's Content Regulation Act, CCRA, to federal review. YouTube suspended monetization on multiple squad-related videos under investigation. Netflix, reportedly in talks to produce a docuseries on the squad scandal, reached out to Claire for rights to her family's story. Tiffany responded the only way she knew how, by doubling down. She posted a cryptic Instagram story. You can try to rewrite the story, but the truth always wins. Don't forget, receipts go both ways. But the tide had shifted. Claire's campaign wasn't a lone voice anymore. It had become a collective roar. A movement led by mothers, yes, but also by former squad kids, lawmakers, creators, and fans who finally saw through the glitter. Behind the scenes, Tiffany was losing grip. Former allies distanced themselves. Editors came forward with unpaid invoices and horror stories. A squad producer leaked internal chat logs showing Tiffany mocking crying children and calling parents liabilities. Even Piper's social media activity changed. No posts, no stories, no vlogs, just silence. Some believed it was strategic. Others believed it was surrender. Claire believed it was fear. She's still a child, Claire said. She deserves healing, not punishment. But her mother, she deserves to answer for what she built. Revenge wasn't the goal. But Claire's war was personal, and she didn't stop until her daughter's face disappeared from every squad video, by court order. And when Lexi saw the screen go blank, when she typed her name into YouTube and didn't see herself crying, kissing, laughing on command, she whispered something Claire had waited 3 years to hear. I feel free. Chapter 16. The Setup. How the System Let It Happen. It's easy to blame one person. It's easy to point at Tiffany Smith and say, that's the villain. And make no mistake, her role in this story is undeniable. She orchestrated it, controlled it, profited from it. But as the lawsuits deepened and more evidence surfaced, a much darker truth emerged. Tiffany didn't act alone. She didn't have to. Because the system was built to let her thrive. From YouTube's monetization model to the legal vacuum surrounding underage influencers, every layer of the digital infrastructure made exploitation not only possible, but profitable. YouTube. Views before ethics. For years, YouTube has positioned itself as a platform, not a publisher. That means it isn't responsible for the content uploaded, even if it's emotionally manipulative, even if it's exploitative, even if the stars are 10 years old and crying on camera. As long as a video doesn't break explicit terms of service, nudity, graphic harm, illegal activity, it stays live, and if it earns clicks, it earns cash. That's the algorithm. It doesn't ask, is this child okay? It asks, will they watch until the end? When squad videos trended, YouTube promoted them. When breakups went viral, thumbnails were rewarded. Every moment of Piper Raquel's ascent was incentivized, from her first kiss to crush confessions staged by adults. And behind the curtain, ad revenue poured in. For YouTube, for Tiffany, for the entire machine. Even when complaints were filed, formal, documented, and public, YouTube took no meaningful action. When called to testify in state hearings, executives deflected. We are evaluating our policies. We care deeply about safety. We will review this specific case. But no review came, no removal, no protection, because enforcement wasn't built into the system. Engagement was. No laws, no lines. In traditional entertainment, children are protected by strict laws. limited working hours, on-set tutors, mandatory trust accounts, Coogan laws, Labor Department oversight, but none of those rules apply to YouTubers. The law hasn't caught up. In most U.S. states, if a child is filmed by their parent inside a house, they're not an employee. They're not covered by any labor board. They're not entitled to breaks, wages, therapy, or even consent, especially if a parent signs off. That legal gap is what Tiffany exploited. The squad wasn't a film set. It was a bedroom. There was no crew, just ring lights. No contracts the children understood, just paperwork parents signed on their behalf. The industry had no regulator, no ombudsman, no third-party advocate checking whether Piper or her squad were okay, because according to the law, nothing wrong was happening, until it all fell apart. Enablers everywhere. The system didn't just fail because of laws or algorithms. It failed because people who should have known better looked the other way. Brand partners, who sponsored squad content, despite clear emotional manipulation. Talent agencies who funneled more children into the machine. Parents who ignored their kids' cries because the views kept rising. Influencer friends who stayed silent to protect their careers. Platforms that monetized trauma and called it family content. And it worked, until too many kids broke. One whistleblower later testified that Tiffany used to joke, "There's always another parent waiting outside the gate." She was right. For every child who quit, there were three waiting to join. Eager, unaware, desperate to be the next breakout star. It wasn't just a cycle. It was a business model. No one was watching the watchers. Even therapists, schools, and pediatricians missed the signs. Children suffering from anxiety, trauma, and confusion about their identity were misdiagnosed or dismissed. "We thought she was just an introvert," one teacher said of a former squad member. "We didn't realize she was being emotionally rehearsed 5 days a week, because influencer trauma is still new. There's no clinical manual for a child raised to act happy 24/7. No diagnosis for kids whose emotions are dictated by a production schedule. No hotline for parents realizing too late that their kid's breakdown is trending." The setup was bigger than Tiffany. Yes, she orchestrated it. Yes, she monetized it. Yes, she should be held accountable. But she didn't invent the system. She exploited what already existed, an unregulated space where children were treated like stock assets, and consent was whatever a parent said it was, and it won't stop with her unless the system changes. "For every Piper," said Claire Morrison, "there are 10 more kids being filmed right now in living rooms, crying on cue, because someone told them it's how they get famous." Until there are laws, enforcement, and real oversight, Tiffany Smith isn't the exception. She's the blueprint, and the machine will keep running, unless someone finally pulls the plug. Chapter 17, The Betrayal. When Piper finally spoke, it wasn't dramatic. No YouTube premiere. No sit-down interview. No viral video. Just a note, posted to Instagram on a Sunday morning. A white background. Black typewriter font. Signed simply, Piper. "I was born into the internet. I didn't ask for it. I didn't always understand what was happening, and I still don't have all the answers. But I know this, I was a child, and I needed help. I'm sorry to the people I hurt. I'm sorry to the kids who looked up to me. I'm learning who I am, and who I want to be. Please don't hate the girl you watched grow up on screen." She didn't know she was acting. She thought she was surviving. The internet froze. For over 5 years, Piper Rockel had remained silent. Through lawsuits, interviews, leaked footage, public outrage, nothing. Her brand had spoken for her, her thumbnails had covered the noise, but now, finally, she was speaking for herself. Within minutes, the post hit 1 million likes. By noon, it was being dissected across every major social platform. Influencers reposted it with crying emojis. News outlets scrambled to confirm authenticity. And then came the twist. Piper's legal team confirmed it. It was real. No brand script, no manager vetting. Her words. Her decision. Posted without her mother's consent. Tiffany Smith, according to insiders, found out at the same time the rest of the world did. The fallout. Behind the scenes, the betrayal detonated like a bomb. Tiffany was furious, not just at Piper, but at the loss of control, the narrative she had crafted, daughter loyal, drama fake, critics jealous, was undone in 6 short paragraphs. She responded within hours, not with a statement, but with a cryptic story. Don't believe everything you read. Even queens get poisoned by snakes. But the world wasn't buying it anymore. Piper's confession, careful, non-accusatory, aching with guilt, felt like truth. And what followed was a landslide. Multiple squad members reposted her message with the same caption, "We see you. We believe you." Lily, who had once called Piper complicit, offered a rare public apology in the comments. "I'm sorry I ever blamed you. You were surviving too." For the survivors, it was healing. For Tiffany Smith, it was exposure. For Piper, it was everything. The separation. That same week, Piper's name disappeared from the official LLC that controlled the squad brand. A quiet legal document, filed in California, removed her as a stakeholder. She had severed ties. Publicists claimed she was stepping away from content. Lawyers refused to comment. But Piper's friends, a few still in touch, said she had moved in with an aunt in Oregon. No cameras, no scripts, no brand, just time. It was the first break she had taken since she was 9 years old. Insiders also claimed she was cooperating with a parallel investigation, a child welfare inquiry launched after the civil suit revealed signs of coercion, isolation, and mental health neglect. In private, Piper was reportedly in therapy, working through trauma most children never endure. One former squad parent said she cried during her first session, not because she was sad, but because it was the first time she'd ever been asked, "What do you want?" A mother's response. Tiffany's silence didn't last long. She filed a motion to regain control of Piper's digital assets, arguing that her daughter was being manipulated by outside forces and lacked the maturity to manage her brand. It was denied. In court, a judge ruled that Piper was no longer under her mother's legal authority for business decisions. It was a landmark moment, not just for Piper, but for all child influencers trapped in parental-managed empires. But for Tiffany, it was the ultimate betrayal. Sources close to the case say she was unraveling, screaming at assistance, threatening to release private messages. In one leaked voice memo, she says, "If Piper wants war, I'll give her war. She wouldn't even exist without me." That audio made headlines. Public opinion turned sharply. Even the die-hard Piperazzi fans began calling for Tiffany's removal from the internet. Hashtags like #FreePiper and #Momager, no more, surged. But Piper said nothing else. She didn't need to. The silence was now hers to own. The turning point. In every great story, there's a moment of clarity. Not always loud, not always triumphant. Sometimes it's just a girl, in her own words, choosing to become a person instead of a brand. Piper's post wasn't the end of the squad saga. It wasn't even justice, but it was a beginning of healing, of reckoning, of a new generation of kids asking, "Is this really worth it?" And in that moment, the betrayal wasn't Piper's. It was the world's, for letting a child become a product, and for applauding the performance, never asking who was behind the camera. Chapter 18. The Confrontation. Face to face in court. The courtroom was colder than expected, not just in temperature, but in tone. All fluorescent lights, wooden benches, and tight-lipped silence. No audience, no fanfare. Just legal teams, a few press passes, and the two women who had once been inseparable on screen. Piper Raquel. Tiffany Smith. For the first time since Piper's public separation, mother and daughter stood face to face, not as collaborators, not as content, but as opposing parties in a legal fight that had come to define the modern conversation around child influencers. The courtroom doors had been closed to cameras, but every seat was filled. Advocates, lawyers, former squad families, child labor experts, It wasn't just a trial, it was a reckoning. The purpose of the hearing. This wasn't a criminal case, not yet. This was a civil evidentiary hearing, a critical proceeding to determine whether Tiffany Smith had violated California labor laws regarding child performers, whether Piper's digital earnings had been mishandled, and whether Tiffany would retain any rights over her daughter's likeness and brand. But beyond the paperwork, something deeper was being put on trial. The question of who owned Piper's childhood. The evidence unfolds. First came the financials. Tiffany's legal team argued that Piper had been adequately compensated for her years of content creation, but forensic accountants presented a different picture. Brand deals worth over $3.4 million, signed under Tiffany's name. Trust accounts set up, but never properly funded. Expenses charged to Piper's brand that had nothing to do with her, including adult travel, beauty treatments, and five-figure monthly payments to Tiffany herself. Then came the footage. A squad editor testified that hundreds of hours of unreleased video existed, including clips of Tiffany yelling, demanding retakes, and berating children off-camera. One video, described but not shown publicly, featured a tearful Piper begging not to film a particular breakup scene. She said she felt sick, the editor recalled. Tiffany told her she'd feel sicker if the views dropped. A murmur rippled through the room. The judge called for quiet. Then, Piper took the stand. Piper's testimony. She wore a simple black jacket, no makeup, hair in a loose braid. She didn't cry. She didn't raise her voice, but every word landed like a punch. I didn't know what was wrong, because no one told me it was wrong. She spoke about filming through illness, being scripted into relationships, having no control over her schedule, wardrobe, or even her name. My mom said I was lucky, that kids would kill to be me, so when I didn't feel lucky, I thought I was broken. When asked what she wanted now, Piper looked directly at the judge. I want her to stop filming kids. I want her to let me go. I want to be a person again. Tiffany stared at her, frozen, pale, silent. And then it was her turn. Tiffany speaks. She was defensive, polished, wearing a white blouse and subtle gold jewelry. She insisted she had only ever done what was best for Piper's future. I'm a single mom. I built something from nothing. I protected my daughter from this industry. I didn't exploit her. I made her famous. She denied abuse, denied coercion, denied emotional manipulation. But under cross-examination, cracks formed. Asked why multiple squad members described the same patterns, fear, coercion, emotional fatigue, she snapped. Kids are dramatic, they're jealous, they want clout. When pressed on a leaked voicemail threatening a parent, she claimed it was taken out of context. When shown receipts for luxury purchases made from Piper's trust fund, she said they were brand expenses. The room felt suffocating. And then the judge asked, "Do you understand that Piper is not your property?" Tiffany flinched, and for a moment, just a moment, she looked like a woman realizing the world was no longer afraid of her. The ruling. The judge didn't need long. Within hours, the decision was handed down. Full emancipation granted to Piper Roquel. Termination of all parental business rights held by Tiffany Smith. An order for a third-party audit of all monetization since Piper's 10th birthday. Immediate removal of Piper's likeness from all squad-owned platforms. And a public statement confirming that children filmed in monetized content must be registered as labor participants, triggering a review by the California Department of Industrial Relations. Piper exhaled. She didn't smile. She just breathed. For the first time in a long time, no cameras followed her out of the building. Aftermath. Tiffany left through the back. Her team declined comment. Her publicist quit days later. Piper went quiet again. But sources close to her said she was relieved, not vindicated, not triumphant, just finally free from the grip of a system that had treated her like a product her entire life. One squad member, watching from the gallery, whispered, "It's over." But the truth is, It wasn't. Not yet. Because while the confrontation may have ended in court, the real fight, the one for regulation, protection, and healing, was only just beginning. Chapter 19. The Collapse. When the lights went out. The studio lights dimmed. The ring lights unplugged. The cameras stopped rolling. And for the first time since 2017, the content house, known as the Squad HQ, went dark. Neighbors said the energy shifted overnight. What once buzzed with music, bouncing laughter, and camera flashes had gone silent. The pink Jeep sat idle in the driveway. The marble entryway, once filled with girls rehearsing challenge intros, now echoed with absence. The collapse didn't come all at once. It came in waves. The empire unravels. It started with the platforms. Days after the court's ruling, YouTube officially demonetized all content associated with the Rockhell brand pending investigation. Over 1,200 videos were either deleted or set to private. Piper's name was stripped from all channel descriptions. The once dominant squad vlogs were replaced by blank playlists and outdated thumbnails. Instagram and TikTok accounts connected to the brand were flagged with under review notices. Brand deals disappeared. PR firms quietly pulled support. Merchandise suppliers cancelled distribution contracts after Claire Morrison's nonprofit threatened class action suits. Then came the reputation collapse. Influencers who once collaborated with Piper and Tiffany began publicly denouncing their involvement. Some deleted old videos. Others posted apology statements, acknowledging they'd ignored red flags for the sake of engagement. One well-known YouTuber wrote, "We all saw it. We just didn't want to lose access. I regret every collab, every like, every post that made it look okay." Meanwhile, former squad parents began receiving settlement offers. Quiet, calculated attempts to minimize further legal exposure. But for many, it was too late for silence. "We don't want payouts," said one mother. "We want reform. And we want people to remember what this did to our children." The survivors scatter. Some of the original squad members went dark online. Others returned to small followings, posting quiet updates about real life, school, therapy, pets, normalcy. A few, like Lily, became advocates, not for fame, but for future kids. "We were the blueprint," Lily posted. "Now we want to be the warning label." Ty started a podcast on child influence recovery. Sophie spoke at two universities about childhood trauma and parasocial manipulation. Eden released a short film titled Offline, where a girl deletes her digital identity to find her real voice again. And Piper? She stayed quiet. Aside from her courtroom appearance and the single Instagram post, she withdrew completely. A few grainy paparazzi images surfaced, a bookstore in Portland, a walk with friends, but no statements, no videos, no new accounts. Her silence was a statement in itself. "She's healing," said a source close to her. "She's trying to figure out who she is without the brand, without the lens, without her mother." The Squad HQ is sold. In April 2024, real estate records showed the content house was listed and sold in under 10 days. The listing didn't mention its history. No trace of the squad remained. No props, no neon signs, no production equipment. But online, fans had already begun calling it the haunted house of content. Urban explorers tried to find it. YouTube drama channels pieced together Google Street View timelines. But the legend faded quickly. A new family moved in. They had no kids, no cameras, just a no soliciting sign on the door. One of the last visitors before the house was emptied was Claire Morrison. She stood across the street, holding Lexi's hand. "That place stole something from all of them," she said. "But it doesn't get to keep it. Not anymore." The legacy of collapse. Legislation began to pass. California enacted new digital labor protections. Illinois followed. The Children's Content Regulation Act moved to the federal floor. Let Them Be Kids launched a national hotline for child influencers experiencing coercion or burnout, therapy stipends, legal aid, a future where child creators didn't have to choose between their voice and their value. Even YouTube revised its monetization policies. no more underage creators without verified labor contracts and platform-assigned caseworkers. The system was slow to respond, but it was changing. And Tiffany, she vanished. Her personal accounts were scrubbed, public appearances cancelled. The last known report placed her in Nevada, fighting quiet legal battles with creditors, ex-employees, and former brand reps. But she wasn't a mogul anymore. She was a relic, a cautionary tale. When the lights go out. The squad was gone. But what remained was more powerful. A community of survivors who spoke when it mattered. A generation of creators now aware of the costs of fame. A world beginning to ask, not just who's on camera, but who's paying the price for it. Because when the lights went out, something else turned on. Consciousness. No thumbnails, no pranks, no performances. Just truth. And finally, peace. Chapter 20. Legacy, what we left behind. No more staged breakups. No more challenges. No more forced smiles under ring lights. The squad's empire was gone, but the questions it raised echoed louder than ever. How do we define consent for a child in front of a camera? Who protects minors when their labor is disguised as family fun? And what happens when the people trusted to safeguard their innocence become the ones selling it? Piper's last post. 3 months after the trial, a single photo appeared on Piper Raquel's reactivated Instagram account. No makeup, no studio, no edits. Just her, sitting on a swing in an empty playground. Wind in her hair, sneakers dangling. The caption read, "I was never a character, I was a kid. Thank you to everyone who saw me. I'm learning to see me too." She disabled comments. Left it at that. That one image was shared over 11 million times across platforms, not for its aesthetics, but for what it symbolized, a child reclaiming her story, not as content, but as a human being. Policy and protections. The wave of reform that followed wasn't just performative. By 2025, 13 US states had passed updated digital child labor protections. Platforms like TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram were forced to include creator age verification and guardian contracts. A newly formed Child Creator Advocacy Board began tracking revenue, work hours, and complaints across influencer households. And for the first time, digital fame had legal consequences for guardians who abused it. Advocates like Claire Morrison helped secure federal grants for therapy and education for former influencer kids. "These children were told they were lucky. That fame was their gift," she said at a congressional hearing. But when the camera shuts off, who protects the child left behind? Her speech helped pass the Piper Rockle bill, requiring all monetized family content to disclose work permits, trust accounts, and on-camera consent processes for minors. It wasn't perfect, but it was a start. The cultural reckoning. True crime documentaries, exposés, and podcasts flooded the airwaves. TikTok creators staged protests against exploitative family vloggers. Former kidfluencers began speaking out, including some who were once part of the squad's extended circle. Netflix's release of Bad Influence: The Dark Side of Kidfluencing sparked international headlines. Its most quoted scene? Piper's voice, narrating over old footage. "Everyone kept saying I was living the dream, but it was never my dream. It was her script." The series was viewed in over 80 countries. It became the most watched true crime doc of the year, and more importantly, it stayed in the conversation. College courses, legal conferences, youth panels. The legacy of the squad became a case study in unchecked power, digital ethics, and the monetization of childhood. The survivors' voices. Lily graduated early and started a nonprofit to support child creators exiting exploitative situations. Ty became a licensed therapist specializing in social media trauma. Eden now lectures at film schools about storytelling without exploitation. Sophie runs a retreat for digital detox and creative healing. She hasn't posted in over a year. And Piper, she started writing music, not for views, not for algorithms, just for herself. A demo leaked from a small studio in Oregon, a soft piano melody with whispered lyrics. I was made in pixels. But I'm learning how to breathe in frames, not everything filmed. Should have had my name. What we left behind. The squad didn't just collapse. It cracked open a world that had gone unquestioned for too long. It exposed how entertainment can disguise exploitation. Parents can become managers, then enablers. And how the thirst for content can swallow childhood whole. But in that exposure, something radical happened. Accountability, reflection, change. And perhaps the most important legacy of all, voice, not scripted, not edited, not monetized, just heard. Because behind every viral moment is a child who deserves more than likes. They deserve love. They deserve safety. They deserve a life not curated for others, but chosen for themselves. And that's a story worth telling.